If you missed the last episode of Catalyst, go back and listen. If you're caught up, here's where we left off.
Back then, Kennedy was so connected. You grew up here, you want to be a cop, you know, next thing you know, you're on the police force.
What do you know about the case, really?
What I had was what was in the file. There's another something somewhere,
yeah,
but never saw it.
It's that very short window of time you have. You need to talk to witnesses, you need to talk to the neighbors, people around him might have seen something.
Yeah, we're working on a story about a missing persons case from right around the block, 1999, Jamie Mabry.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Did police come by and talk to you about it?
No. No, police never came and talked to me or anything.
They didn't want to deal with this because of the way Jamie was. The homosexual, transgender, and they didn't want no part of it in a small community like this.
I'd never been to Kennedy before I started looking into Jamie Mayberry's missing persons case. The official population there has bounced between 3 and 4,000 in the 20 years since his disappearance. But the unofficial population is something else. In the time he's been gone, the area around Kennedy's experienced one of the biggest oil booms in Texas. Hotels popped up overnight, and many old homes, including the one where Jamie lived, have now been split up and converted to apartments. A lot of it is just to house all of the oil workers who come to town. Their tanker trucks clog up the highways and streets, and police tell me the bulk of their work is spent enforcing traffic laws as a result. Beyond that, there's not a lot of crime in Kennedy, but certain crimes are why you might know the town's name. In its outlaw days in the early 1900s, it was known as Six Shooter Junction for the gunfights that happened downtown. During World War II, there was the Kennedy Alien Detention Camp that kept prisoners of war. And nearby, an Immigration and Customs Enforcement Center has made news in recent months for detaining hundreds of families trying to cross the border between the U.S. and Mexico. But Kennedy's biggest headline so far probably happened the year after Jamie went missing.
These subjects should be considered armed and extremely dangerous.
In 2000, a major escape from a maximum security prison for men had the country on alert.
The hunt continues for seven escapees accused of killing Officer Aubrey Hawkins.
The John B. Connolly unit, named after one of the state's former governors, sits on the edge of town.
Whenever they made good their escape from the town of Kennedy and abandoned the pickup, they had to get another vehicle.
It's not a topic people there really like to talk about, because it's sad, personal. A scar on the community.
A tip from a viewer watching the popular television show America's Most Wanted leads authorities to this RV park.
Seven inmates staged an elaborate breakout and became known as the Texas Seven.
They found the notorious Texas Seven, a gang of convicted murderers, rapists, and armed robbers.
Their interstate crime spree even left a police officer in North Texas dead.
Because after the escape, authorities believe the Texas Seven robbed this sporting goods store and killed Officer Aubrey Hawkins.
Six of the inmates were eventually recaptured and sentenced to death. The seventh killed himself while on the run. A story like that tends to overshadow others, but they all have something in common that shows the town's law enforcement roots run deep.
Growing up here in this small communities, we were all friends.
Still, if you've lived here through it all, Jamie Mayberry's story is one you won't likely forget.
Went to school in Carson City, but I knew his brothers and his sisters, and then got to know him even better when I became a part-time officer here in Kennedy. In 1982.
Detective Felix Casanova wasn't working for the Kennedy Police Department when Jamie vanished, but he returned to the force shortly after.
As a detective, when did the case kind of come under your purview?
About a few days ago, a couple of weeks ago, when she says, I want you to read this.
That's when we'd called the police chief.
I remember hearing the story that Jamie had left the house on his own and never returned. And I know they began an investigation on a missing person, and they were trying to ask the public if anybody knew any information on what happened to Jamie. And basically that was it. Great person, great attitude, even though he was never judged as the cross-dresser that he was.
Do you feel like any of this was related to Jamie Mayberry's lifestyle?
My personal opinion, back then, it probably was. If you're hitting up on a person that looked very attractive, and then you come to find out that the person isn't the person that you thought it was, it would probably aggravate one. And who knows, was this person the person that did something to Jamie for the disappearance?
I told the detective that's the question Jamie's family has too. And they feel like police back then didn't do enough to find the answer.
Did they talk to neighbors? Did they talk to family? That kind of thing?
They talked to anybody and everybody that was mentioned at the time. Just by what I've read, it was handled appropriately. And with the resources that were here at that time, they did what they could. And they even brought in the Texas Rangers back then to help out.
But when did that happen? When you have only a handful of officers, most relatively new to law enforcement, and who haven't dealt with a case like this before, the next step might be to ask for help.
I was hoping to talk to you about a case that it looks like you worked way back 20 years ago out of Kennedy, Texas.
Mayberry, uh-huh.
Our producer Sarah tracked down Mari Aldridge, the Texas Ranger who worked with Kennedy Police on Jamie's case. She's retired now.
We just really never had much to go on. We interviewed a lot of people. We searched some places that, you know, we heard rumors about looking at the river, you know, a couple crossings at the river and different things like that. And nobody came up with any information at all. And in cases like that, what you can hope for is that somebody gets in trouble somewhere in a bind and says, well, you know, I have information on this, if you help me out, you know, that kind of thing. And that never happened. So that was about it. We ran down every lead that we got and never got any new information at all.
Yeah, so nobody at the department seems to have too much information about when the investigation initially happened.
The ranger didn't have that time frame either, but records we've pulled together suggest she wasn't called in to help police until sometime between 5 and 11 days after Jamie's family reported him missing.
Should Kennedy have requested help sooner?
I wouldn't get called immediately unless there was something, you know, really obviously wrong at the scene or something.
I'm just thinking it might be because Kennedy's a small town.
I'm not going to comment on, you know, what another agency, if they should have done something. The bad thing is that getting called in, you know, after the fact is kind of tough, makes it harder. We really didn't take it over. I always like to include the local agencies, keep them involved. I was just assisting them with their case, basically. I mean, you know, it turned out to be a case that I have to write up and do a report and stuff on.
We asked for the Ranger's report. It took an official request to the Texas Department of Public Safety, or DPS. And guess what? We got a similar reply to the one we'd received from Kennedy Police. They only gave us the basic information, the front page of the report. But the biggest difference was the status of the case. Instead of just active, the Rangers list it as suspended, which basically means it's an open case, just nothing's being done until something new pops up. That's what happens to a lot of cold cases. How many? That's not easy to say, because DPS doesn't post all of those cases on its own website. The Texas Missing Persons Clearinghouse online bulletin is a site open to the public where you can search for missing persons by name, location, year. It gives you photos and a lot of other information about the cases, but there are only around 700 available to view. Remember, we'd learned that Texas actually has about 5,600 active missing persons cases from just the last few decades. So why aren't the rest available? Well, after a police department enters a missing person into the National Crime Information Center, it's also part of DPS's missing persons file. Only police have access to that. DPS tells us cases that meet its criteria can be posted on the public website. That criteria includes family contacting police and filing a missing person report, sending a current photo of the missing to DPS, and a copy of the custody order if it's a case of parental abduction. Then someone, family or police, must request that the case is featured on the website. My question: why isn't it just added to the site, since police are already sending the information to a place where DPS has access to it? In an email, DPS admits the online cases are a relatively small portion of all missing persons cases in Texas. To me, it seems like a lot of steps to get the word out, and a lot you have to do on your own. That includes filling out the request form, which we discovered doesn't always end up online correctly. We looked through the hundreds of cases posted and found errors in several of them. The wrong race in some, the wrong age in others, which missing persons advocates tell us might mean you're telling the public information that's confusing, which can be bad when you're trying to get the word out. Sometimes we even discovered the form was filled out correctly, the data just didn't end up that way on the DPS site. Perhaps that's why there's a disclaimer on the form that you won't hold DPS responsible for any errors. Running out of options with law enforcement, I decided to look elsewhere for records.
And then we turned the corner and there were more boxes.
And came across a nonprofit group that specialized in missing persons.
We've been searching for a couple of hours, but so far nothing. But as you can see, there are 27 years of records to go through, and some of it was before anything was digitized.
Digging through boxes of their old files, I found that Texas Ranger's name listed among search teams from the community.
There it is. We are literally on the last box. Well, I'm glad we found this. And there's
too.
A lot more information in here than I expected.
People who volunteered to look for Jamie Mayberry back then.
This would be the sign-in sheet. And so often there's multiple searches. It may not be just one day. So you'll see there's probably a lot of different notes.
But I noticed some other names among the searchers.
That briefing form.
Names I'd seen before.
If they find something.
Names I haven't told you about in the police report.
So it'll be documented.
A list of suspects. Next time.
The whole town almost shut down. We were split up.
These people here and the neighbors all joined us.
And you can't help but think like.
Yes.
Am I walking with the killer?
They even feel like the people that took James were out there searching.
Many times the reason we save all these records is that the people that are responsible for the missing will be there in the searches.
Be sure to check out our interactive investigation, Mayberry, Texas, online at mayberrymissing.com. You'll learn so much more about this case and many others across the state. Catalyst is reported, produced, and edited by me, Josh Hinkle, along with Sarah Rafik, Arzo Dost, and Andrew Choate. Digital support for Catalyst comes from Dax Dobbs, Eric Henriksen, Nate Mills, Matt Mitchell, Ricardo Ruano, Robert Sims, and Kate Winkle. KXAN's news director is Chad Cross, and its vice president and general manager is Eric Lassberg.